Brittle Diamonds, Chapter 35, The Letter and the Sister, the same day. The letter which Father Peter dictated to Matt was not at all the document Matt had expected to type. He'd been so hopeful that this would be the defining moment when the cancer patient finally revealed the truth to his host. He felt he deserved it as a reward for taking him into his home, although he knew he shouldn't. Time was running out for the disgraced clergyman, and he'd still not been found innocent. Matt began to wonder whether he was harbouring a sex offender after all. The only reason he'd had such faith in the priest was because the man sounded so convincing, and Matt himself wanted to believe in his innocence. It was galling to have failed in his own attempts to clear him, only to be told that the evidence was being hidden, and Father Peter was in a position to produce it. That alone pointed to his guilt. He seemed to be hiding it until he died, after which it would be found, and Frank Nonnet proved to have been telling the truth all along. Was Father Peter simply a good con man? Was that why Bishop Mullard was doing nothing to help him exonerate himself? Because he discovered the truth and was spinning the investigation process out until his erstwhile protege was permanently out of the way? When he asked Father Peter point blank, all he got back was, "I'm only concerned for the souls of my accusers. They have to live with themselves when this is all over, and should they win money in this case, they won't be able to take it with them. Even Cerberus won't be able to stop them entering the realms of darkness." Matt didn't know what to believe. He asked Rosa in exasperation, "Why doesn't the man defend himself?" "There are only two explanations I can think of," she replied. "Either he's guilty, or he really hopes the accusers will change their story." "Which way are you leaning?" "Matt, we've offered a dying man a home for his last days. Does it really matter any more what the truth is? Unless, of course, you're worried about what the rich will say if it turns out he is a paedophile." "I must admit, it has occurred to me that we will look really stupid if we're wrong about him."
"But even looking at it from such a harsh perspective, and you should be ashamed of yourself for doing it, Matt Goldworth, you will be in good company. Think of the others who support him by coming round here. The Oldings, Catherine, the Wilsleys, they're willing to take the risk with you, and if he's found guilty, they can't pretend like Florence Pendleton that they knew all along there was something wrong with him."
"They're too decent to even try it."
"Well, there you go. So stop worrying. The main thing is to make his last days peaceful and happy. His conscience is his own to deal with, and he's too weak to get out of his wheelchair and chase after Neil, in case that's another concern of yours." Matt had to smile. The image was too ridiculous. "Don't forget, Matt," Rosa continued, "he's fighting cancer. His energies are used up just making it through the day. He doesn't have any left to fight useless battles."
"So why doesn't he give me the ammunition to do it for him?" Matt asked petulantly.
"He'll have his reasons, Matt."
"But are they the wrong reasons?"
"Do you think they are?" Rosa looked up at him questioningly.
"No. Oh, I don't know. I just hope not."
His wife patted him on the arm. "Your gut feeling was no. Go with that, and for goodness sake, don't let Father Peter know you have any reservations." But the priest's dictated letter, which Matt reluctantly posted to the bishop, had him wondering whether the man was slowly losing his mind. Why had the clergyman, a priest for over 40 years, chosen now to tender his resignation from the priesthood? Later that afternoon, the doorbell rang, and Matt opened to an unfamiliar woman's face. "Hello," she said cheerfully, as Matt took in her details. She was 40-ish, plump but well-dressed, in an expensive-looking swing coat of cream cashmere, a fawn handbag and matching pumps, and had a London look about her. Something else about her tweaked his memory. He'd seen her grey-blue eyes before, but not that shock of red hair that reminded him so much of Tracy. "I'll clear up the mystery right away," she said. "I'm Josie Woolgrave, Father Peter's sister. I've come to see how he's doing." Matt was taken aback. He'd forgotten this sister. Wasn't she the one who'd paid Frank's niece to have her baby? Initially, he thought this was pretty late in the day to be visiting a terminally ill brother. But when he reflected how much grief she'd brought on Father Peter, he was glad she'd waited. He gathered his wits enough to say, "I'm sure he'll be very glad to see you. Come this way." "Thank you." The lady walked into the hallway. It occurred to Matt to warn her that her brother looked different. Did she know he was in a wheelchair? How much had Father Peter told her? He began, I don't know whether you've been around a cancer patient before, but you'll find that your brother looks rather altered. Oh, Josie said, I hadn't thought about that. In what way altered? He's lost a lot of weight and his skin has a greyish tint to it that will be unfamiliar. And he's in a wheelchair. A wheelchair? Oh, my God. Josie's hand flew to her mouth. I didn't realize he was this close to... Matt felt embarrassed. Where was Rosa? He smiled in what he hoped was an encouraging way and led Josie to the conservatory. It had become Father Peter's favorite sanctuary. Now that the weather was improving, it was a pleasant place to sit. The view of the back fields was tranquil, and every so often a deer and her fawn would come out to eat, or a huge red fox would slink along, thinking himself unnoticed. Once trapped by the glass of the round room, the sun's heat was doubled. It was an uplifting room. But he could see Josie found nothing uplifting about it. After his warning to her, Matt noticed she almost tiptoed through the house behind him, as if wanting to see her brother before he saw her, and thus give her time to adjust to the sight of him. Father Peter was sitting with his back to her, looking out at the green expanse before him through the huge glass panes. Hello, Josie. Come sit with me. It's been a long time. Matt watched Josie take a few tentative steps towards her brother, then stride more courageously. Her brother put out his right hand, and Josie came alongside the chair and took it. Don't be afraid, Jose, her brother said, looking up at her and using what must be his pet shortening of her name. This is far worse for you than it is for me, really. Matt could see the sister's eyes filling with tears. He'd had time to get used to the change in the priest, his gaunt skeletal look, the ashen skin pallor and frailty of the man. Josie had not. When she'd last seen him, her brother was hale and hearty, strong as an ox and imposingly tall. Peter, I never realized how this has affected you. I'd have come sooner if I'd known. I'm so sorry. Father Peter squeezed Josie's hand. It's all right, Jose. It really is. I'm glad you're here now. Josie took a chair opposite her brother, while Matt preoccupied himself at a distance in the kitchen. Over the past few weeks, he'd become very protective of the priest, and now found himself unable to leave the room. He was the anxious hospital nurse, hovering, ready to evict any visitor who overtired his patient. Father Peter turned his head to glance at Matt, and then back at Josie. Matt here knows everything, so don't feel inhibited. Matt smiled at the invalid for understanding, without being told. Initially, Matt found the reunion between brother and sister sweet. But when Josie asked her sibling whether he'd had time to check on Tracy Nonnock and see how the twins were doing, he felt the bile rise within him. How dare she care about herself? Couldn't she see her brother was dying? Didn't that matter to her? He watched Father Peter for his reaction. They chit-chatted back and forth a while about her work, her husband, the state of the country, and a little bit about his health. Josie was clearly having a hard time talking about it, and her brother kept it brief for her sake. But when she was selfish enough to ask him about the babies, Matt wanted to reach out and strangle her. Selfish witch. She should go and talk to Tracy about the babies, not her brother. He was in enough trouble as it was without being reminded about his sister's Catholic faux pas. His instincts, as Father Peter's nurse, were to tell Josie that her time was up. Luckily, she happened to catch Matt's eye. He slowly shook his head at her with his lips set in a crooked smile to take the sting out of his expression. Josie was smart enough to get his meaning and quickly said to her brother, Don't worry about them, Peter. You have other things on your plate. I'll let you rest for a bit while I pay Tracy a visit. I'll come back to see you before taking the late train back to London. Matt interrupted with, You're very welcome to stay the night if you want. That's really kind of you, but Gerald is expecting me back tonight. Matt understood. She couldn't bear the sight of her invalid brother. He hoped it had gone over her brother's head, though it was unlikely. They were brother and sister, and the priest was too good a judge of people. Father Peter turned his wheelchair to face Matt. That was a kind gesture, Matt. He took his sister's hand and patted it paternally. He was her senior by a good many years. Josie here is needed at home. He looked up at her with a smile. I'm glad you found the time to come by. Good luck with Tracy, and I look forward to hearing how it went later on. It then occurred to Matt to ask Josie what her mode of transport was. She definitely couldn't have walked from the station, nor was she going to do so to Tracy's house. She looked a little flustered. Oh, I came by taxi and asked him to return here in a while. Matt walked her to the front door and saw the taxi already waiting for her. She had never intended to stay long. Goodbye, Mr. Goldworth. I'll see you a bit later. Matt closed the door behind Josie Wallgrave and wondering what Father Peter had done to deserve such a selfish sister.